You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
And the show comes to a screeching halt. Joe Flippo, what is this?
This is a lovely song. It's come my be my love, come somewhere.
Really? All right.
It's from The Car Ride.
It's the Peter Sebo band, Come My Love. Oh, everybody's heard this song. How could you look at me like that?
The grand classic from the great Peter Sebo. Welcome to the Bates Motel After Buzz After Show. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined by my main man, Joe Sanfilippo.
Nice to be here with you guys.
I'm also joined by the lovely Dua Casey.
Hi, welcome.
If you're watching on YouTube, Nando has got a lot better looking. He's to my But it's actually, if you're listening on iTunes, you'll know that it's actually the great Nestor Carbonell who's joined us today. Woo! Alex Romero himself.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Thanks for being on with us.
It's my pleasure.
I mean, no offense to Nando, but I like sitting next to you better. Nando probably will be joining us shortly. He's going to sneak in a little bit down the road here. But so we're here. We're going to chat about the show as usual. Nestor's going to join us. He's going to be part of our little breakdown post show here, and then we'll get in some questions about your career and some other stuff and in your character, and you can tell us exactly what the F Alex Romero is up to.
No, yeah.
And then how the show ends.
No. Well, we know it ends. We know it ends. I saw that with in Psycho.
Yeah.
It ends badly with a knife and a shower curtain in the shower. But so let's get into this episode, The Plunge. Lots happening
dun,
in this
dun,
episode.
Dun.
The show continues to be as great. What I realized about the show this time is every from season one to every episode in season two, I find myself laughing out loud mostly at Norma, because the tone is, I mean, it's obviously dark and it's dramatic and it's scary and it's other things, but it's kind of hilarious and it's intentional, it seems, but the humor is there. And I don't know. Did you guys laugh?
I laughed from reading the pilot out loud. The writing is it's all there, and what Vera obviously brings to that character. Uh-huh. I mean, she brings just about every color under the sun to that role.
She's a brilliant woman.
She's crazy.
Here we go. Let me warn you that you think you're the guest here, but every question will be, what's it like working with Vera? Because someone's in love with Vera Farmiga here.
Am
I wrong?
No. She is extraordinary. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
Ridiculous. She's a crazy talent, and she's also an incredible person. So it's.
Well, see, then that means I'm not a talent whore. I thought for a while it turned out I was, but she's such an amazing actress. Watching her perform is incredible.
Yeah.
And then now you guys elevate each other, I would imagine, because you have such a neat crew. It's such a great set.
It's an amazing set. No, yeah, you walk onto that set. That motel was built on a landfill right there on the border, the U.S.-Canadian border in Aldergrove. Mm-hmm. So it built from scratch. This incredible crew built this replica, and it's a pretty close replica. And so you walk on that set, and you're absolutely right. You just need to step out of the car, and then you're in that world immediately.
Is it scale? Because another one, the Universal one, is obviously smaller scale.
It's a lot smaller. No, the one we have is to scale.
Is it a functioning, like, actual set? Is it just a facade, or you go in there and?
No, actually, all the rooms they're not all fully functioning, but pretty much, yeah, they're all built, and the house is partially built. So the interior of the house isn't completely built, but quite a bit of it is. In fact, there was a New York Times reporter who wanted to spend the night at the basement.
I was going
to
say, did you guys let him?
Well, yeah, we did. But I think he struggled with the hot water. But they had water for him overnight. But he did. He managed to spend the night.
Did he make it?
I don't know.
That's what I'm being it out.
If he was in room four and he was a beautiful blonde, he did not make it.
Yeah.
Well, back to the episode. So we a lot going on. We see Norma's making a bid to for her to start her political career. We see that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She tries to sever ties with Nick Ford, which didn't seem to work too well. We get to see what happens to Dylan, and he has a mysterious boss who's hot. By the way, I will say.
I've worked for a lot of people. I've never worked for anybody that hot.
Who's that boss?
No one that hot has ever offered me money for working.
I mean, I said earlier she had some serious Pacific Northwest swag going on. She had some, like, you know, the flannel tied around the waist. It reminded me of 1993. She was lovely.
No, she's a, mm-hmm. she's a beautiful, beautiful woman and another great talent.
So hopefully we get to hear, see from, more from her. We got a lot from Norman and Cody, a lot from Emma and Gunner. And a lot from Norman today. I mean, a lot of Norman, a lot of reveals.
Got a little sneak peek at a little bit of, I like how they did that flashback and really kind of gave that sneak peek. They're just revealing, like, just like little, like, nibbles. They're getting little nibbles every now and then.
Well, let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about the whole, the first thing we see, which is this exchange between Norma and Nick. Because Norma, has after a warning from you, from Alex Romero, I should say, to not really get involved in this guy. He's a drug dealer. So she kind of, and after the unfortunate death of a Councilman Berman.
Yes, Berman.
He just kept driving. It's just so sad. Right off the.
Yeah. She decides to go right out to the old boat. And have a conversation with Nick.
This is the over and over again thing. Like, reality versus Norma. Like, this is not acceptable, and I'm going to go tell him that he shouldn't kill people.
Yes.
It's the mother of Norma. I mean, but that's, you're absolutely right. That's, I think that's what makes that character so, you know, delicious, is because she's just a mom who thinks this is the way things should be, and I'm going to tell you how they are, and she doesn't realize you can't really do that with a drug lord.
Oh, yeah. No. And she's always stunned over and over again when reality rears its ugly head. She's just, like, shocked by it.
Yeah, we talk about this all the time. One of my favorite things is Norma, you know, the sort of the self-righteous Norma, you know, starting down one path and then realizing that she's, you know, wrong, and then having a total meltdown at the end, just burning the place down. I love it. So she didn't do that with Nick.
Not with me.
No, she got quiet quick, which was good.
She got a little spooked. You're right, though. But no, it's interesting. It brings up a good point, because I think a lot of mothers, you know, hook into her character. And it's funny, because my kids are in school, and a lot of the moms come up to me and say, you know, I really identify with Norma. I don't know why, but I love her. But I'm a little creeped out now with my own relationship with my son, because if I hug him a little too long, I'm thinking maybe it's a little Norma. Yeah. You know, you'll see a lot of women come up to me and identify with her, and much of that is what's on the page, but a huge part of that is what Vera brings to that character.
I think the good line that I've drawn, if I tackle my daughter onto the bed and land on top of her, it's getting weird. I think that's the time.
If
I
linger for just a second.
Like, linger and a snuggle. That's probably wrong.
I will not bury my face in my mother's boobs.
Either. No.
That's another one.
The judge was very clear. I'm not to do that.
So, congratulations, mother. Brumsky. Wait, what? What happened there? So, I don't know. But what did you think of this confrontation with Nick?
I think that Nick showed a different side of himself.
Menacing, really fast.
But it was so internal. That's the great thing about all of the acting, is that it's so internal. It's not overacted. It's kept inside, and it's kept on that level. But you know, he simply says, and sometimes it's like in the not saying anything. That made it so much more intense. But I mean, I think that Nick is behind everything. I think that Nick is behind what's going on with the mayor. I think that, you know, Nick is behind why Kathleen.
I do too.
I think that Kathleen came to the motel right afterwards. That wasn't Kathleen. That was Nick.
Like, hey, pal. Yeah. Hey, Norma.
Isn't that weird? Not
Kathleen. You're thinking of
Christine.
But
Kathleen, Christine.
I got to toss it out there. We haven't gotten to the bottom of this, because Christine's husband. Is it Paul? Peter.
Her brother George, you mean? Oh, no.
No, the husband.
At the dinner party, the husband said that was
He's for the bypass. He's all about the bypass. Right. But Nick is obviously against. Where is Christine in all this? I mean, is she with her husband? Is she with Nick?
I don't know. Right. She may be with Nick.
But I just want to say one thing. I was right.
You were right.
Here we go.
I was right. I predicted that they are just going to use Norma as a pawn for their greater...
Yes.
You know, I also made another prediction that came true. We'll talk about that later.
We'll get to that.
I'm just saying. That's all I'm saying.
It does look like you're right. It does look like that Norma, that she's being very, you know, she's being steered in the direction of getting the seat, getting Councilman Berman's seat. Mm-hmm. And we know she gets it. Yeah. So the mayor approves, you know, according, and she's there. So I, you know, we'll see what her influence does.
And she was really childish about the whole situation. I mean, as soon as she has her, you know, her biology report, as soon as she has all that information, and now she doesn't need Nick anymore, she's like, we shouldn't do this.
Right.
This is too much. It's like she didn't know what she was getting into before.
Well, it's classic Norma.
Like, you tasted that wine. It was good.
Yes.
You knew.
Yes. I can't remember the Chateau Le Vervoir. I just happened to have on the,
right?
Like, Becky, can I get some of the Chateau Vervoir?
Yeah.
Of course, Nick.
But this is Norma, though, because, you know, like, she gets – Christine comes by and says, you got to go get this seat at, like, 10 in the morning. By 11:15, this is the most important thing in her world.
Right.
Like,
right.
She's completely flipped, like, yes. And, yes. And that's Norma. Like oh, that, now this is the most important thing in the world. And Norman has to – that's his normal life. That's
right.
That's expected.
So he's
like,
he has to deal with.
Exactly.
I'm on board. Yes. Okay, Mom, yeah. Here we go. Roller coaster time.
So speaking of that, we'll look to Dylan in a second, but I just want to jump right into Norman, too. Because speaking of Norma and Norman, you know, we talked about this mother, this very, you know, close relationship they have. But I thought today, you know, when I was watching the episode again today and last night, I thought, like, you know, Norma, she's not so bad. She's just a mom out there trying to protect her kid. She's not so bad. Because you have this vision of the only thing we really knew about Norma Bates pre-season one is she was a skeleton. And, right. You know, and she probably did some pretty bad-ish to poor Norman to turn him into this, maybe. And so, or who knows. But I really thought that we'd get a darker, more manipulative, more sinister Norma. But what we're getting is a way more complex Norma.
Again, a tribute to Vera and also the writers. I mean, and you get waves of it. I mean, remember with the driving lesson and stuff like that?
Of course.
And holding that carrot over his head and, you know, the driving, you know,
yes.
Getting the license and that kind of thing. So she's manipulative, like any good mom.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But she's, yeah, there's a level of mommy dearest here. I mean, there's definitely, and you guys are, without giving anything away, that dynamic is going to heat up. You know, in all the right and wrong ways,
I would
towards
imagine.
The end of the season. So you'll see much more of that dynamic play out. And then really the show, at its heart, I think, asks the question, how much of a psycho is born and how much of him is bred?
Right.
You know, and I mean, I know that I've spoken to a number of psychologists. At that level, usually you're pretty hardwired. But they're, you know, it's a spectrum. You know, there are some of these psychopaths that can be tilted one way or the other.
Yeah.
And you wonder how much the mother's dynamic is party to
yeah.
that.
It is definitely nature versus nurture.
Well, yep. we'll see because, I thought that same thing. I thought Norma was, you know, a little overbearing, but not so bad until we got towards the end there. You know, obviously the way she treats any woman that is near Norman,
oh, yeah.
You know, we talk about that a lot, the way she's had her complete contempt for Cody, you know, that whole situation. But the way she did the thing at the end, the manipulation in the car when he decided to leave you know, that was, there was something there that was, you know, both manipulative and almost sinister, and it was really disturbing to me. That's the first time I was like a long time. I was like, oh yeah, Norma's the one.
Well, you know,
well,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, great TV, to me anyway, happens when the characters don't seem like they had a choice.
Right.
It almost seems like the circumstances have led you to a place where you can make a mistake, mm-hmm. but that doesn't make you evil. And so to me, if right. Norma and Norman. You know, the way that they're written, they're so complex and they're written so beautifully. If this continues the way I think it's going to go, I don't think we're ever going to be at a spot where we're like, that's where Norma did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's going to feel cumulative.
And Norman, too. I mean, like, we get these ebbs and flows. Like, this episode and last episode with Cody, there's some happiness there.
Yes.
It's like, nah, look at Norman. He's a normal kid. He's getting laid. He's hanging out. Yeah. He's having a beer. This episode, he's happy. He's swinging off a rope. I mean, the joy on his face, yeah. Swinging off the rope. I'm like, and, you know, Freddie Highmore, he's good at acting too, by the
and
way.
And he's especially good at acting in that scene because it was freezing that water.
I was going to say, I saw their breath in a couple of shots. I was like, that could not have been fun.
Well, that's an interesting side note because that scene we were going to shoot much earlier on, I think we did, but you know, there was a storm at the time and just for flooding, you know, I mean, the river overflowed and so it was too dangerous. There was a current. So they couldn't actually shoot that scene. So they had to wait another 6 weeks to shoot it, which meant in Vancouver it got a lot colder.
Oh.
So, you know, to all of those actors' credits, they braved that water. They went in, and Freddie was the first one to jump in there, and, you know, he weathered that whole day.
So is that one of those days where you guys stand back and you're like, nah, good for you kids. There you go.
You're young. Get in there.
you do it. No, I'm not going to do it.
No, you're so much better than me at this.
How long does it take to shoot? Is that is that an entire day process?
Yeah, that would have been a whole day. They shot that whole day there, and it was actually raining that day. So they had to work with the elements. I think the writers.
Well, there was some rain at the end of the scene. There was some rain at the end of the scene.
Oh yeah.
And then again, I just thought that's how they do it in the Pacific Northwest. They'll just, you know, it rains. They jump in.
You go out. That's what you do.
It's only 10 days. Of sunlight anyway. We are joined. I should note that we are joined by Nando Blasquez.
Hey, Nando.
How you doing, Nando? It's my good friend Nestor.
Yeah, he's your main man.
He's my main man.
That's his thing. Main man.
Your seat is filled.
Oh, awesome! No, this is a pretty comfy couch. Actually, I need to be famous and on cast or something so I can be on this couch more often.
Right.
So yeah, we're just late.
Yeah,
we're
that's
just
it.
Late. I did have a question. How many takes do you think to jump in that? I mean, I could only imagine. Yeah. I could see the whether it was the character or the actor that had that fear in their face going into that water. I could only imagine. Okay, we got to do that again. Sorry, there was a little problem.
I was in the comfort of my own little studio apartment in Vancouver, but I heard that Freddie was actually the one asking for more takes. So Freddie's a trooper. He wants to get the scene right. He's got such an amazing attitude. So yeah, no, he you know, jumped right in, and then they did have a little hot tub there that they can get in, crawl into.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, he was in that water a lot, and he was happy to do it.
That's beautiful.
So let's get back to that, because we talked about these ebbs and flows and how happy Norman was. You know, his relationship with Cody is something that he, you know, Norma, of course, has warned him yes. about, as she always does. But he has this sort of rebellious teenage, like, you know what? I like her, and I'm going to continue down this road anyway. We saw last week he saw what's going on with Cody's father, Cody's abusive father.
Right.
We saw this week, which we'll get to a little later, that he gets to see it firsthand, you know, in the closet, which was his whole situation. but yeah, so I was upset because I feel like the front half of this episode we had happy Norman, and then we saw all of the blackouts and everything that makes Norman happen towards this episode,
sure.
and the losing his temper, which he does all the time.
As soon as Norma said, "What a great day." You knew it was all downhill there. There ought not to be a question.
Very much.
Doubt. This is going to end in the mud.
It's very much so. And I think Emma even said, Cody at the top of the hill, like when she's like, come on, don't you like, she's a China doll. What can happen? Nothing's going to happen. I'm like, something is so going to happen.
That's the words you say.
Right before something happens.
Yep. So, I mean, you know, what do you think of Norman's sort of transformation in this episode back to the Norman that we, you know, I there's two sides, right? We have the blackout Norman, right? Mm-hmm. We have the transformation into Norma Norman. That's just mm-hmm. three sides, right. I guess, if there's such a thing. But then we have this other sort of like losing control, anger, temper tantrum Norman.
Well, that wasn't Norman, I don't think. I think that was Norma. Are you talking about when he lost his temper after Cody needed her oxygen tank?
Yes. No,
Emma needed her oxygen tank.
Emma. After Emma. Yes. So sorry. Yes. We can't get these names right today.
Yes, we're doing all right.
After Emma needed her oxygen tank, I don't think it was Norman that got mad. I think it was Norma.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Really?
It felt very Norma. It felt very protective in the way that Norma is over Norman.
Right.
Yep.
It really rang like that with me.
But there was no blackout. There was no transition there.
No, but that's exactly my point, though. It's becoming a little bit more blurred. We're talking a lot about what is triggering Norman. Today we saw that he was in the closet and apparently his father got angry. We thought this was sexually based.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it necessarily is, but something is triggering him. So now delving deeper into that, I think that now we can overlap, because Norma was telling Norman the entire episode, Cody is bad, she's bad, make a good decision, don't keep secrets from me. And then all of a sudden, when he gets angry and upset, he turns into his mother to protect Emma. That was not Norman.
It lashed out at Cody.
And Gunner. He almost whooped Gunner's ass. Well, Gunner got scared.
Stay out of this.
You stay out of this. I got scared.
I could back you on that, but I'm wondering, because the way they shot that, it seemed very, very King of the Jungle, very animal. Like, they shot it from very low, so Norman was huge, and he backed Cody down, like, straight gorilla status.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, you shut up. No, and she literally demurred. You watched her.
The tough Cody.
Shrinking
the
back
fearless
away.
Fearless Cody.
Sure. Yeah.
It seemed very animal to me. It felt more like, I agree with you that the blending, because I think that's eventually, my understanding, my extraordinarily limited understanding of psychosis, is that if you've created a blackout thing, then eventually they try to merge those two so you can get rid of the blackouts and be a moderately screwed up individual.
I think a part of it, too, was not only was Norman acting like Norma, but with that camera angle, it made him more menacing in a way, kind of like Cody's dad would be to her. In a way, he was kind of like, you know how it is sometimes when you see the way someone's being treated by someone, next thing you know, you don't mean to, but I guess you're so used to seeing someone in that light, you end up treating them the same way.
Right. Yeah.
The same buttons get pushed. Yeah. So I kind of concede Norman even taking up to Cody. Cody's not noticing a Norman-Norman connection, but she's noticing all of a sudden, like her father, another man in her life, treating her like this, saying, it's your fault, you're the one that did this.
It's that familiarity that kind of is, you know, interesting. And I think the whole time, Emma, it was really almost, in a way, like smitten by the situation because he came to her defense in such a way. And it's like when, you know, when the tables are turned and when the shit hits the fan, I'm going to be right by Emma's side and making sure that she's okay. And I think that that was very, very sweet.
Yeah. It was sweet. I'm not so sure that that was, for my money, I'm not sure that was Norma. I see where you're both coming from. I just feel like we've seen this before. We've seen it with Dylan. I mean, not in the blackout situation. We see Norman lose his shit.
Yeah.
And we've seen him do it with his mother. So like, it's not a mirror image thing. So we saw at the end of the episode, that same angry thing. And he's calling her mother. Mm-hmm. He wasn't. So that he does this thing where he loses it. He has this, the temper comes out and then everything be damned. And then we have separately, we have the blackout thing. You know,
right?
So I don't know. I don't mean, maybe they are related and they're just merging.
Well, the other thing to consider is, you know, his dad's been gone for what, 3 years now, 2 years, 3 years, right? I think
three years.
So he's going to be pulling. He's going to be doing some mirroring. He's going to be doing some modeling on other men in his life. And so if he's just seen Cody's dad pop off like that, and he recognized that maybe as strong, maybe as whatever he saw it as, he might be responding to that too and trying that on.
And that's why I felt also that he was acting that way to Cody, because he just witnessed it a little bit in the closet. He kind of sourced that.
I mean, Nestor, you may know, but I mean, is this temper tantrum, is this a psychotic break in your opinion, or is this something that is where Norman's going? Is this something as a gateway to his sort of blacking out, or is this?
I'm going to go with, you know, with a theory that it's more of a maternal instinct. I think it's, you know, I think in that moment with Emma fearing for her, I think he steps in as his mother would, you know, as he's seen his mother would do in the past with him, and sort of mother him. I mean, I understand the notion that, you know, he could have sort of been witness to, and he was witness to, the abusive behavior that Cody. But I think in that moment, Emma represents, she's really the heart of the show. I mean, she's all pure, she's pure heart.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everyone's Machiavellian in their own way, but she has got an enormous heart. Mm-hmm. So I think he's always seen that purity in her. And I think for him, I think that dynamic is more the mother Norma to him, he is to Emma in that moment. In that moment, it felt like it to me, but I may be wrong.
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that, but which is I think separate from him becoming Norma, blacking out and becoming Norma, like the Norm Bates of the future, like we saw him do last week.
He wasn't full blown with Norma's brother in the hotel room.
Right.
I will agree with that, but we're seeing little snippets of it. So now, all of a sudden, in a few episodes, when you see, and you'll be like, how did we get here? It's these tiny little episodes we're hinting at it because
they're... And we know when he is full-blown Norma, that's when you should be fearful of him. Because when he is there, when he is unleashed, that's the beast unleashed right there.
Absolutely.
But we did not see that. We saw someone very protective, overreacting to someone, or reacting to someone that they felt was in danger, which was a line that was said in the whole thing. So that's what we got to see. My question pretty much is, what does this mean for Emma? Because obviously we definitely see the sparks kind of get reignited.
Or
there.
More importantly, what does it mean for poor Gunner?
Dude.
Gunner was like, he was so happy.
Cupcake boy is out.
Cupcake boy is out.
You can always make cupcakes.
You can always make cupcakes. Can you always wear your puka shell?
Double
right?
puka shell.
Double puka shell.
Hey, man, you need one more puka shell. Triple puka shell. All the ladies you want.
Is that how it works?
That's what they tell me.
I mean, you go,
I gotta wear my puka shells.
can you go more than three? What happens if nobody's ever done it?
What happens to Gunner, I wonder? I mean, obviously.
And Cody can make a happy life together, smoking weed.
They seem much more daring, the two of them.
Yeah.
Enabling each other.
Let's just make them together. Let's just put them together.
That'll be fine.
You know, the other thing I think that goes on with that whole scene that I think he checks in with Emma afterwards. You know, Norman goes up and he's like, hey, did I overreact? And she says, no. Well, I don't know anything from normal, but it seemed cool to me.
Right.
And thank you. And so now Norman's got the stamp of approval from somebody he thinks is probably not crazy. And so that I think we'll see more of this because it's been validated. Yeah.
Well, I want to backtrack a little.
Well, I don't want to give anything away. But I don't want to. Yeah, that's enough.
All right. We want it. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I do want to backtrack and talk about that scene with Norma and Cody, which was, again, I laughed out loud when...
When Norma ran in front of the car?
When Norma's outside, that scene, that beautiful shot of Norma just coming down the stairs in her wedges, like, stomping to the car, you know, and then jumping in front of it. And then saying, Norman, can I have a word with Cody, please? And Norma's like, okay, I gotta go. And then she rolls up the window and then lets her have it. Yeah. Look. Yep. I thought that was amazing. Then talk about menacing. I mean, the way Nick was menacing to Norma in the beginning of the episode, sure. Norma was definitely let Cody know.
And
Cody got the message.
Oh yeah,
like Cody very much got the message. Well, Cody, who's been kind of sassy to Norma and like, "What's up? A beer is a beer," or whatever.
But right.
She got
Cody
the message.
Understood. She understood exactly what she.
Well,
meant.
If she understood, she didn't do much good about it. Because do you like rum?
In that moment, though, I think she was, as she should be, was afraid of Norma in that moment.
Yeah.
Norma was dead effing serious.
And
in
it
that
took
car.
Her a little while. It took her a little while after she left to get back to regular Cody. You know, she was a little awkward in the beginning of that scene with her and Norman afterwards.
But then again, this is the complexities of what a great job Vera Farmiga does with his character, because on some levels, she's, you know, super childlike, teenage-like, innocent, doesn't know when it comes to her own life. Mm-hmm. Then when she deals with Norman, she's super affectionate and motherly, and other times she's fierce and protective, and it's, you know, and then all the and obviously overbearing and all obviously manipulative. It's a lot of layers there.
Even in that exchange, and this is why, in my opinion, Vera Farmiga wins acting.
I hear it.
Because
we know.
Thank you.
And then no disrespect to our guests here.
You get to work with her.
Are you kidding me? I'm the biggest lobbyer. This woman.
Emmy's
for everyone.
So, in that scene, just hopping in the car, you got so many different ways you could play that. It's written fairly straightforward, but she put the menace combined with the please understand what I'm saying to you. This is a medical thing. I hate you, but I cannot tell my kid not to see. Like, it was all there in a handful of lines.
I pity the editors are great editors on our show, because when Vera does a scene, she does every take differently. So they just have the sort of conundrum of figuring out which is – they're all amazing takes.
Oh, God, that's a good
which
point.
Which one do I get to pick?
Because you got so much beautiful stuff you're going to lay on the floor.
Exactly right. She's like, she took me to this place, she took me to this place, and they're both equally interesting. So it must be extremely hard. I'm not kidding, in the editing bay, to choose which is the better one.
Thank God you're not the editor, Joe Flippo.
The show would never get made.
I love everything.
I'd have like four hairs left. I'm like, no.
He would just do episode one 8 times.
Yes.
For a different take. Tune in next week for a different take.
This is version 47C.
So that was a good part. So that exchange is one of my favorite exchanges, of the season, of many excellent exchanges, including yours, you know, which we'll get to later. But I, with Vera in the scene, and the one scene you had with Norma was fantastic, and we'll get to that a little later. I want to talk about that. But I do want to talk about, before we get into Dylan, the resolution of that where Cody is forced to tell... after the closet incident.
Can I bring up one thing
real
quick?
Of course you can.
I don't want to forget to bring this up because I think that we've been forgetting. Did you see in the scene with Norman and Norma in Norma's bedroom when he was playing with that scarf?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh,
yes.
Beautifully done.
He was playing with that scarf. Yes. And it's just a foreshadowing of like, hey, I'm going to be wearing women's clothing.
Yes.
I
might strangle some people with this.
Yes. It was so well.
Even with that scene, he's walking into her bedroom and he's getting jealous over her, getting jealous, and he's wringing the scarf. It's just again, just that eerie relationship, and we see that later on when they're hugging a little too long on the bed.
We talked about that.
Also, that whole thing.
Also worth pointing out, that was a much more adult thing to do. Like, that was a man thing. That was not a kid thing. You're holding on to something that belongs to your wife, presumably in normal life. And you're interrogating her. Who are you going out with? Who is this person? And that felt to me, it was very controlling. He took the scene. He took over that door. And he took over that area. He's blocking the exit, and he's asking questions. And he's got something. He's controlling himself from crumpling. And it was so brilliantly. Yeah. I'm so glad you pointed that out.
Because that was great catch.
But it was a transitional moment. He's becoming more of a man.
Plus, man, there's so much more in Norma's room than his room. He's got like a stuffed dog and a lamp in Norma's room to look at. as most teenage boys do. It's your average teenage boy room.
But just even before he crumpled it, just I had to rewind it because I wanted to see when he grabbed it. He just like pretty much walked in, just grabbed it like it was an intimate piece of clothing he just has total access to.
Sure. But masculine. very masculine.
That's
move.
Just one of I think of many. I know there are like many Easter eggs that we find in this in this thing. So it's a lot of like.
Well, the pearls too.
The pearls.
There are lots of pearls.
Your scene when you're like, we can see you in the window. Like that's because that's to me that's where she is.
That's
in when she's in her skeleton in the window.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a nice little throwback acknowledgement of I can see you in the window.
Yeah.
I'm like everyone can because she's a dead skeleton.
she was so almost turned on by that. Though.
Well, we'll get into that. I'm gonna save that because there's in that. But let me just wrap this episode. Let's get to this episode. Quick, so we have that scene. Thanks for that. But we do have Emma after the scene in the closet, which was we have the flashbacks, right? Yep. which we touched on, which was I couldn't exactly see why pause a few times. I couldn't exactly
there
what
was a
going
slap
on.
In there. There was a slap in the middle of it.
In the
there
flashback,
there were three of them. Yeah, the first one was just a long blurry shot. Second one was a slap. Third one, it looked like somebody was grabbing somebody's leg.
So if that was really who was he in the closet with? Who was a young Norman? It was Norma, right?
It was Norma.
So who was outside getting whatever?
Oh, Dad might have just been throwing around. He might have just been stomping around and throwing things.
No, he was slapping somebody.
There,
I thought
it was some of them was out there.
I thought it was just a flashback within a flashback of him hiding in that closet because he's witnessed his dad doing stuff like that before.
Right.
And I thought he was doing that to Norma.
But if Norma's in the closet with them, so
that's why a flashback within a flashback. He's a flashbacking to a young kid with Norma.
This is like Lost.
But then, well, there we go. But then he's also
sideways.
But then there's a memory of that as to why he's hiding in there because he knows the ramifications because he's seen his father attack his mom. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, he was hiding in there because Norma obviously put him in there as a small child because she was hiding in there. So this is actually through Norma's eyes. If Norma thought that she was in danger, she would bring her son in to protect him.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Barely.
It's all
I'm lost. That's true. I got no pun intended, but I've got so Norman as. Norman was Norman was looking at flashing back through Norma's eyes. Theory?
This is that Norma it thinks that she's in danger. What is she going to do? She's going to take her young son and hide in the closet.
Oh, got it.
So, you know, Norman doesn't know whether or not they're in danger. He only knows this because of his mother.
Got it.
Yeah?
I do understand.
Okay.
So Cody decides to tell so after the incident after Norman goes fully ballistic at the swimming hole, which was cool, Cody gets really, really scared and decides to tell Emma. And I thought it was sort of that she was really trying to manipulate or get back at Norman in some way. But it was all genuine. It was really sweet. Like, Cody was genuinely concerned about Norman and genuinely wanted to reach out to someone and reached out to Emma. And I was a little shocked that Emma sort of, like, spilled the beans. But, again, she's all heart. And everyone cares. No one knows that Norma's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone cares. And so she tells Norma. And what does Norma do in the exact moment when she gets the information? Takes her a split second to realize. She runs up to the thing and ruins Christmas.
How much did 16-year-old you go, oh, man, no!
I know, Mom!
Yeah.
No! Yes.
We could all relate to that.
You can try again in 3 years. 3 years? I'll be dead! It won't be in 3 years.
I actually wrote a note at the beginning of the episode saying, so she's concerned about him drinking and driving, but not concerned about blackouts. So, just glad to see that kind of go full circle and her call him out on that.
Now, do we think that that was a genuine her being concerned about her son in that moment, driving, blacking out, or do you think that was a relief moment for her, now he doesn't have to drive. I think she was not wanting him to drive the whole time. It was almost like, oh, now I have something.
I don't agree with you.
I mean, I'm asking the question.
I'm telling you, you're wrong.
Your
question is wrong.
I'm just asking the question.
I think you sit there.
You just think about what you've done.
Was it prevention or was it manipulative?
So at the very, very beginning of the episode, what did she say to Norman? Don't lie to me. Don't keep secrets from me.
Yes.
When Emma, who thinks that Norma is just this amazing person and doesn't know her manipulative side, confides this, and Norma's looking at Norman, who's sitting in this car.
Right.
She's like, he's keeping something from me, and she needs to be in control. This is the only thing in her life that she has control over.
I completely agree.
Spot on.
And so, bam. So, yeah, I mean, this is it. And, you know, of course that she's going to be mad, but he's going to have to talk to her again sometime, and they'll get over it, and, you know, she'll let him go. But yeah, that's my answer.
You know, I want to toss something out here because I think Norma gets a little bit of a bad rap, and it's not just because I love Vera, although that plays a part. The entire show is about Norma protecting Norman from himself.
Yes.
The whole premise of the show, everything that's happening. And before that, it was her life was about protecting Dylan from the truth about who his father was and how he was conceived. So much of her motivation is protecting other people. So, I know we say that she's manipulative, and that's true, but her overarching needs are those of someone protecting her children. That's
yeah, the true. Device is manipulation. The intent is to protect. You're right, but the only way she knows how is to manipulate.
Absolutely,
and I think you're absolutely right. It's interesting bringing up the driving thing, you know, and the licensing. It is such a huge part of because I remember Freddie had questions about that. And he comes from England, and I don't think he even drives. I don't know if he drives even in London right now. But you know, it's just not as big a deal, and certainly in London. You know, have your license, and I go, oh, no, in the States, it's a huge deal to get your license. It's like getting your wings, you know. It's like you get freedom, you get to, and so he fully grasped that, you know, as you know, we all talked about it. And I think, yeah, I think this is a carrot that she holds over and dangles on, you know, on the Norman, but ultimately, you're right, she rips it out of his hands when she realizes, oh, my God, I may lose control here, and I may lose him to Cody, and, you know, again, with the blackouts.
Yep.
But it is an issue. She's a control freak. At heart, she is. Yeah. She may be. The intent may be to protect, but the device is to control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we see the result of that is Norman forcing Norman to pull the car over and continuing this dominance and continuing this thing that's like, you can't control me. Like, you know, and walking with her and standing up to her in a way that we've never seen him do in that manner.
Sure.
And then walk away and Norma sort of lets him go. Yeah. You know, I mean, what do we make of that, Norman? Where is this coming from?
It's this. It's the Norman that's becoming a man. Hmm. It's the Norman with the scarf. It's the Norman that's becoming a man. And he even said it. He's like, I'm not a little kid, you know. And so, you know.
A man who would dress like
a
woman.
Well, you know, here's the other thing to keep in mind. He doesn't have all the pieces to his own puzzle.
Yeah.
He has huge pieces that are missing that he doesn't know about.
Right.
And that's enormous. Because he's operating off one set of facts, and they're incomplete.
Right.
And the only person that knows them all is her. And so when he pops off in those situations, it's not like she can tell him the truth, and it's not like we're operating where everything's above board. Because if she says you killed your dad and we moved here because you are a nut and you did this thing, and I have to protect you, all bets are off. And so I mean, obviously that comes out later on. Seems to be the direction we're going.
Yeah.
But at this point, you know, he's not operating with all the facts. She has to kind of let go, I think, sometimes. Like, all right, I can't push on this. I can't convince you because there's no way. I'd have to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Well, last but not least, I just want to just very briefly, 30 seconds worth, Dylan. Wakes up. He's, you know.
What a great episode for
Dylan. Is waking up.
Yeah. Okay, that was a great episode for Dylan. And he's confused. He's like, hey, like hospital? The good hospital?
And Dylan comes to in a weed smoker's paradise. Wait a minute. You mean to tell me I can have meaningless sex with a gorgeous woman
who's
on
boss.
Top of a mountain of weed?
And she's like, don't take it personal. Okay, I won't take it personal. Let's just do it.
And she just promoted me.
Yeah.
And by the way, you're running my whole operation.
Unbelievable.
I think that is setting the stage for some sticky situations. That's all I have to say.
All right,
you're in charge, but you're not in charge.
Words.
Well, I mean, but obviously seeing how Norma's being built up by the other family at the same time that Dylan's getting all this power, so we just know that there's
a rivalry. There's, you know, we have the Nick.
Ooh,
Nick and Norma versus Dylan and the mystery woman. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. So we know what's going to happen. It's going to be Dylan versus Norma very soon. You know, in what capacity we don't know, but it's definitely these two families using two members of the same family against each other at some point.
Do you know who I think is going to be right in the middle of it? Sheriff Alex Romero.
That's a hot prediction. Hot take Sam Flippo. Hot take Flippo.
I can read this stuff like a book.
Speaking of Sheriff Alex Romero.
Wait a minute. Do we have him here?
We have a guest today who plays Alex Romero. And, you know, I want to first talk about your scene that you had with Norma, because I thought there's a very small moment there that to me encapsulates everything that Romero is about, which is to me complete ambiguity and enigma and everything else. The moment where, obviously, you know, there's an exchange between you and Norma. You have the nice suit on. And then you kind of come back and you seem to maybe be hitting on her, but I don't know if you're hitting on her. It's very sexy, but I'm not sure. Turned on.
It was his duty, though. He's a sheriff. Yeah. Like, it's my duty to tell you. It's going to be uncomfortable.
Well, I thought you were going to go with hitting on people. I'm like, I ought to be a sheriff.
It's like, I need to tell you this, you know, and it's just, and I got to tell you, I was a big fan of Lost. You play Mysterious so well. Oh, you have it down. I never know what's going to happen. Yes. Like, it's just, and you had me going all through season one, two, and I was like, is this the guy? I thought that you were like the big boss of everything. And I'm like,
we had you at the giant yeah. weed kingpin. I think I had that prediction. Yeah. I'm like, Romero's the kingpin. He's running the whole town.
He thinks it's his town. You're right.
But that scene, so I just, on that, yeah. I mean, what was there on the page? What did you do? You know, because I was like, I went every way. I mean,
yeah, it was interesting. On the page, it was sort of scripted that it was, you know, sexual attention. But, you know, I talked it over with Vera because I thought, I don't want the guy to come off as just a perv, you know.
Right.
And I thought the only way I could play it as a character, I thought, would be, as you mentioned, if he's protective of her. I said, look, you know, I mean, you know, obviously I'm attracted to her. The character's attracted to her.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the kind of thing that there's other, you know, people staying in the motel and, God forbid, you know, the creepy people looking up there and seeing her getting nuts. So it was really more of a... I'm sure that probably Romero, when he saw her, probably lingered and before he pulled away from looking at her. But you know, I think ultimately, I said the only way to play this so it's not pervy is to be on the protective end. Mm-hmm. And then I thought that would probably be uncomfortable in on its face just to tell somebody that. And so the end of that scene was. We sort of let the uncomfortable moment play.
Yeah, and it was
and that played out as you can interpret that uncomfortable moment any way you want.
Yeah, and it was
great.
Yeah, it's like, this is awkward. Okay, so that's what so we did try it a couple different ways, Vera and I did, but I think ultimately we felt more comfortable playing it in an uncomfortable way.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about just the character of Sheriff Romero? I want to know sort of how, you know, obviously you've worked with Carlton Cuse in the past, but how you came to this role, and we're really all curious about how much is on the page? How much is on the page in terms of, is he written as Sheriff Romero, mysterious guy, you don't know, or is there an arc, you know, with him? Is it like episode three, he kills everyone, and you know, and you play it out? Like, well, first start with, how did you come to the role?
Yeah, well, I came to it, thankfully, through Carlton. Carlton had, I knew Carlton was doing the show, but I didn't know much more, you know, about, you know, beyond just sort of the basic premise. He called my manager and said, hey, you know, wouldn't I do a couple of episodes? We're starting the show with Vera Farmiga's attached. And I said, of course, I'd love to work with you again. And it's a no-brainer. That'd be a dream to re-team with him. And so then I think once he knew I was going to do a couple episodes, I didn't hear from him for a month. So then I called my manager and said, hey, are we going to do those two episodes? And he said, actually, no. So he called in and said, no, actually, now that you're interested in a couple, he wants to add you to the show. I was like, fantastic.
Merry Christmas to me.
Thank you. And then he sent me the first six episodes. Those were written, so, which never happened on Lost. On Lost, we really got, sometimes we just got pages on Lost,
right?
Because especially towards the end of the season, as they were writing the finale of every season. But here I got the first six episodes. There's more information than I ever got. And to your question about whether there was an arc, there wasn't so much an arc in terms of character, because, you know, the character, I think, on the page was a pretty gruff guy. But I started to sort of, you know, like we did on Lost, you write your own kind of backstory and you sort of imagine. So I based him off of a good friend of ours who's I won't say his name, but he's a writer, who we call him, my wife affectionately calls him Chuckles because he never smiles. So I'm basically playing Chuckles and to some degree. There was some level of an arc on the page, but I think, you know, the challenge is for all of us to sort of interpret on some level. And they see, you know, Carrie and Carlton obviously see what they feel works for them, and they'll write to that as well.
Right.
So when you guys got to it in the beginning, there was something there, but you guys have now kind of, I would imagine you've morphed into, what you've morphed into is so much fun to watch.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it is a bit of a give and take. I think, you know, there's something that's on the page, and even the scene directions will sort of indicate, okay, he's angry and he's kind of becoming hard. But you can find colors within that, too, to say, well, you know, there's moments of lightness and humor or uncomfortable moments that you can find within that. And, you know, obviously Vera does that in spades. That's our job, is to take this incredible material and just sort of make it our own, and then find that role within that.
got that simmering pot thing going. I love that. And, you know, never know. It's always something underneath, always a little bit dangerous, but it's never really out there. It's never overt.
Well, don't tell it to Zane. It was overt to Zane's ass.
Well
Zane
got
a warning.
Yeah, burning a guy's house down.
Yes.
I think he got off easy.
You know what's interesting is Zane burns the house down, and I'm wondering if they are using this mainly. Are they using this for like a vehicle to get Sheriff Romero and Norman Sheriff Romero and Norma together? Because now they have a lot. Now they're in very, very close proximity to each other. I'm trying to figure out what Sheriff Romero thinks of Norma.
You know, I think he is at once mystified, attracted, and enervated by her. I mean, she drives him crazy. But I think they're sort of a counterpart to each other. She is a control freak, like Romero is a control freak.
Yeah.
So they're two guys, two people sort of hardwired in some similar fashion who butt heads, you know. And I think – but I think he's attracted to her strength. I mean, it's something I think, Joe, you brought up before, too, is that she's got this sort of maternal, strong maternalistic instinct. And he's sort of charmed by it. Like every time – She's comes across something in the town where she can't get her way. She's sort of mystified by it. It's sort of there's this sort of innocent quality to her. But I think he's charmed by that. He's like, wow, this woman has really thought she could. She thought she could come to this town, start up a motel, and think that she could run things her way.
Yep. You know, she's kind of doing it.
And she's
too.
So he gives her props for that. He's like, wow, this woman she's got some cojones.
And it is really interesting considering in season one you were just trying to get rid of her, just get her away from you. Those fun scenes in the station when she's trying to get your attention, you're just ignoring her. And now due to circumstances, you're again in close quarters. So it's amazing that you're it's all heightened. All of these senses are heightened at the same time now because you're forced to be in such a close circumstance with her.
Absolutely right. Yeah. She's a giant pain in the ass that, you know, who you can't shake, and then ultimately you say, oh, wow, she's not that bad. And it's like, oh, she's not bad looking either. Yeah. So all of those things sort of come together. You're like, wow, suddenly you start falling for that person.
Right. Can I ask you a question?
Sheriff Romero will eventually give in, and they will start doing it. I'm just saying.
Well, no, it's not prediction time.
We'll see. I don't know.
It's made the NBC guy very uncomfortable in the corner. I'm supposed to do that to him. Here's my question. This is purely from what you're doing with the character. What does a character lose when he loses his house? I mean, you had to have gone through that. So what do you?
I did. It's a great question. I thought of that. It's like, well, I thought, first of all, I hadn't talked to Carlton Carey specifically. I mean, I tried to about his background. Is he married? Is he divorced? Is he kids? I won't share any of that because I don't know ultimately what's going to be revealed. But I have a sense of all of that history. So I needed to know that. Certainly, if the house burnt down, is there more than just my damage, damage to me personally or anything else? So that was made clear to me. I won't give that away. But it certainly raises the stakes. All of those questions raise the stakes, if you know. And it's a personal thing. I mean, if someone would literally go in and torch your house down, and all those personal, you know, not to mention the equity you lose, but just the personal memorabilia, photographs, all of those things, you can imagine what that would do to you. I use all of that to get into essentially a hockey fight with Zane.
Great fight. Are we going to get any sense of Sheriff Romero's direct role as it relates to the town? Because there's all the speculation of, okay, well, he's more in bed with Nick. Well, maybe he's more in bed with the other side. Maybe he's just trying to keep the peace. It's his town. I mean, the anger when the bullets started flying and people started dying, you know, when poor Gil met his fate.
Oh, yeah.
You were very, Sheriff Merrill was very, very angry. And I can't tell if that was like, you know, kill a guy like Gil Turner because he's my boss, or you can't kill a guy like Gil Turner in my town. I don't know how much you can tell me, but will we get answers on that?
You'll get answers on not everything, but on some of that. You know, again, I can't give that stuff away. But yeah, I mean, you'll definitely, by episode 9 and 10, you'll get a sense of where Romero's, you know, where he is in this world. But that's about as much as you don't want to know more than that.
As long as we get to know.
You'll definitely get to, you'll absolutely get to know. You know, again, I think he's going to have, you know, what Dewey said too, he's going to be shrouded in mystery to a certain extent. I'm sure he'll always have it because he's the kind of guy who does keep everything close to the vest. He's not going to give everything up.
Yeah.
But I think to your question, I think he is, you'll get a sense of where he is in the power struggle
But that's what makes it so exciting to watch. Like, I don't want to know because I want to watch the reveal. Like,
right.
that's
yeah.
the, you know.
Sure.
If I knew everything right now, then it wouldn't be as exciting.
It wouldn't be.
And, and it's also an interesting layer on top of it that we do ultimately know the end of the show because of Psycho.
Yeah.
But so everything, as you said before, is bittersweet. Everything
always.
Is bittersweet.
Yes.
And it just, you know.
Yes.
Every smile that Norman has, we know, is eventually going to end in a very, very sad clown face. So,
yes.
I mean, so it is so much fun to, it's like, we know, but you don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
this
I
day
know.
On the swing and the rope swing, that's the best day
I
you're
know.
Ever going to
yeah.
have.
Enjoy it.
But no, but be honest, it's really purgatory. Everyone's dead.
No.
Come on.
Boom.
Just
Nando.
Everything on
spoiler
the
alert.
Oh, okay. All right, just checking.
Oh, no. just with the world. So, I mean, you're actually, this material is, you know, it's based on the, obviously the books and the movies that we all yeah. know and love. You know, Carlton and Carrie's done a brilliant job of sort of going back and really filling out this world for us.
Yeah.
Like, how
yeah.
do you, I mean, for you, were you a fan of, I mean, of course you're a fan of the Hitchcock stuff,
sure.
but like, you don't have the pressure of, you know, sort of having to recreate a character
I
in
don't.
This world.
No,
so how do you as an actor, as a character, sort of like, you know, what's it like to be able to be in this world but not have the pressure of working with being Norma or
yeah.
Norma?
To fill in the spots.
Right. Exactly. I put all that pressure on Freddie, and he handles it very well. No, I'm not only lucky in that respect, I'm also lucky in being the recipient of yet another character shrouded in mystery. So whether you love him or hate him, you got to know who he's about. So you know, until you know, he's going
to
live.
Do you look at it? Do you look at it as your character gets to influence the Norman we end up seeing in the end?
I think every actor, when they look at the role, they think that their character is the most important thing.
Right?
Sure.
Right.
I think you have to. I think because
otherwise what, you can't work. That's
no,
it.
Yeah, you have to make it. No, you have to make it that character rich within that world. But I think. You know, I don't want to give away any more than I think it's a great question. I just, in terms of story, I just don't, you know.
It's hard.
And honestly, I don't know where it's going to go now. We picked up for a third season.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank
congrats
you.
For a third
thank
season.
You so much. Thank you.
You guys wrapped like a year ago, though, right?
We wrapped a while ago.
Well, wow.
We wrapped almost a year ago, yeah.
So this is way in the can.
I know, it's in the can, so yeah, but it's great to.
When we go off the air, I need to know everything.
No, but I will tell you one thing that to me was amazing, for specifically with this show, is that, you know, most shows and most TV shows that you know I've ever done, you're asked your character is supposed to be sympathetic. If you're a series regular, you know it's sort of part of the gig is you have right. to be sympathetic. You know, if it's network TV for 22 episodes, that's sort of a litmus test. You know, that's where they have the focus groups.
Mm-hmm.
With these roles, they can be sympathetic and unsympathetic within episodes, within several episodes,
mm-hmm.
and it's,
great point.
As an
yeah.
actor, it's extremely freeing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because you're not trying to please any one group. You're just playing that character, warts and all, as they are. So you will hate Romero. I remember someone at Comic-Con said, you know, I really liked you on Lost, but I really hate you on this show. and I looked at him and said, you know, I got you right where I want you.
Victory!
Yes.
Like that.
I'm glad you brought up Comic-Con because we all have some Comic-Con experience. We're all sort
great
of
great party this week, Comic-Con. The Bates Motel party?
Yeah, that was
loved
great.
It.
Anyway,
oh,
so
I've got stories.
We
that's for off-camera.
But speaking of Comic-Con, like, you've been, you know, quietly or not so quietly, you've been, you know, you've been a part of, like, these projects that are super pop culture touchstones. I mean, you know, with the giant fan bases, rabid fan bases, you know, Bates Motel and the people who know Bates Motel and know Psycho, you have them to contend with and to some degree. Obviously, you've dealt with the folks from Lost. I want to talk about what that experience was like, just the experience of dealing with those folks. I was one of them. And then, you know, the Batman trilogy, you know, you got to be involved with that.
There.
And, of course, The Tick, Batmanuel.
And don't forget Suddenly Susan.
And, of course,
don't forget that.
And the biggest pop culture.
The biggest pop culture.
The biggest pop culture touchstone of them all. Suddenly Susan. No, but, I mean, you know, is this, you know, I don't say this is something you're looking for, but I mean, you know, you look up and you're part of, like, you're a real
very lucky.
Pop culture sort of icon to a certain degree.
Very blessed, very lucky, and I have a lot of people to thank for that. No, listen, I've, you know, some of these things happen. The way Lost happened, I was not even going to, I've told the story before, but I wasn't going to audition for that. I got the audition the night before, like at 5 o'clock. It was like 12 pages of material with this Richard Alpert character, a lot of dialogue. I was like, there's no way I'm going to prepare this by 9 in the morning effectively and get this part. I won't, you know, I'm not going to waste my shot at Lost and doing a guest star on there, you know, by preparing badly and going in and tanking. And I woke up in the morning, I was like, you know what, I'm going in. And I'm glad I did because I got the part.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was going to grow beyond that episode. I was in a flashback. And then, sure enough, It did. 7 weeks later, I was on the island.
So. Yeah, which is great, because I also know that it was a weird thing where you had the guest shot in season three, and then you got Kane, and then that happened to get to go do that, and then it was like, is he coming back? Then the writer's strike happened, and you got a chance to go back, and then you're back.
Listen, I have been, like I said, very lucky and very grateful, and very grateful, to Chris Nolan, obviously, but really Carlton. I mean, yeah. To get the call from Carlton to join this show after having worked with him on Lost was a gift, and this is... I mean, equally an amazing experience, working with him again, with the incredible writing of his the whole team and Carrie Aaron, and then to work with us another incredible cast, right. Spearheaded by Vera and Freddie. I mean, it's a gift. Move.
You brought up that for Lost, sometimes you just got pages in advance as opposed to getting a lot more prep material for Bates. I was curious because we talked a lot about this in season one, knowing that it's Carlton Cuse and hearing all of these Easter eggs. Yeah. How deep does Bates go, and are we really, from what you know, without going forward, are we really capturing everything? Are we still missing a lot what we've seen?
I think I love – this has been amazing and illuminating for me, the discussion you guys have had here, we've all had. Because I think that's what the show is about. It's about the psychology. It's a psychological thriller, and it's really – it's about the genesis of this psychopath, and all the attributing factors. And like you said, most psychopaths are hardwired, and he probably is to a certain extent, but there have to be sort of – other governing forces, that are at play or that might be expediting that, So I think this discussion is what the show is about. It really is about all these things. I don't know that. I mean, there are little things that Vera, Freddie, and I would do and have done. I mean, the pearls, I won't give away. There's something in episode 8 that I play with. Mm-hmm. There are little things that we look for in scenes. Sometimes we show up on a set, we're like, oh, well, that would be fun to play with. So we find things on the day. There's a moment that Vera, I won't say which episode, she gets some news and she starts scratching herself as if she's broken out in hives. It's just a brilliant choice by an actor. Mm. So that's the kind of actor she is, naturally. Yeah. Mm. So you get all of these things. That's just, us having fun. So I don't know if that's necessarily the written stuff. But, yeah, there are little – I think there's Dharma beer in one episode.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah.
That one outside on the patio with the weed smokers. Yep.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, and there will be there's moments. There's something we added in episode 8. It's a throwback to episode to the pilot episode.
Oh, okay.
I improvised it and they kept it, which is cool. Hmm. So, but because they're looking for little things like that too. So I there are things definitely there. They're little that we're, we're thrown out every once in a while.
Mm. Will we get an appearance by Batman? Well,
the cape and the codpiece will be there. Sure.
I've said it for years. Joe and I have a continuing argument because I know. As far as the people who've codified this is the post-secondary golden age of television or whatever.
This is the
golden. But I think it's the golden age of television. I think it's such an amazing time. There's such amazing work being done. And we live in a time now where people can appreciate those little teeny tidbits because the interwebs, the magic of the interwebs, they will tell look, it's so awesome. It's all, you guys get, you'll get love for that.
Thank you. I couldn't agree with you more. I think this is the golden age of TV. I think we all have the Sopranos to thank for that. I think they, when they stepped up, they changed. I thought that, in terms of the cable world.
Of course.
And not because I was a part of it, but I certainly think in terms of network TV, Lost, did its share of sort of changing minds about what can be done on network TV.
Absolutely. No question.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. Especially from a serialized standpoint.
From a serialized standpoint, for sure. And one of the wonderful things that Carlton has done on this show is he's made it, again, really a character-driven show. These highly dysfunctional characters that I think people, even as dysfunctional as they are, people can identify with aspects of them. So everyone will see something or want to see something in themselves, in the characters.
Absolutely.
So we have to ask these standard questions. I mean, what do you, the Bates Motel is amazing. We're here at AfterBuzz. We do a bunch of shows. We are fans. What are you? Are you watching anything? Are you one of these guys who, I don't watch TV? Are you watching stuff? Not putting you on the spot, but.
Naked and Afraid? Anyone?
No. Naked and Afraid, yes.
I saw an episode of that like a couple days ago. I could not, I was like, what am I watching? And then I, 20 minutes later, was still on.
Right.
I'm like, I'm still watching.
Is that the after show?
Exactly. No, that's it. It's Joe and I in college.
No.
Okay. It's
the old which one of you was naked? And which one of you was afraid?
I'm just grateful I have pants on. Right.
Great show.
No, I mean, listen, I, if, even, well, for this show, I actually binge watched First 48. I did a lot
okay,
of it,
yeah.
Another A&E show, very dark show, but an incredibly well-produced show.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I did, and then while I was in Vancouver, I binged, obviously, Breaking Bad, like mm-hmm. everyone else. Everyone
oh,
else.
Yep. So good. Yeah.
Man, it doesn't get much better. That's an extraordinary show. So, I definitely watch. I just,
fair enough.
You know, I binge.
We all binge.
I'm relieved by that. Sometimes we get together like, I haven't watched TV since 1971.
Oh, no. Listen, I'm one of the few guys who still watch. That I know a lot of people do that watch a Survivor. I'm still a big Survivor fan.
I'm a Survivor fan too. Right. Every
what about
week.
That last Tribal Council?
Oh, it was a wild.
Amazing.
So many dumb moves. We could talk about those two immunity idols coming out. It was all strategy, but I'm going to give you mine even though you're safe. I'm going to give you mine. And then they still didn't need them.
I know.
It was crazy.
And then she say Cass saved the day.
Yeah, it was Cass. I guess you saved the day. If you're rooting for them. If you're rooting for them.
You're not rooting for Tony.
I'm not rooting for Tony. I think Tony's a little. I should. I'm from New York. I kind of get New Jersey thing.
I'm sorry, guys.
Sorry, guys.
It's the most excited I've ever seen ever.
Find a hard kindred spirit here in town.
I would love to do the Survivor After Show, but they got Jerry Manthey doing a good job, and I'm doing every other show anyway. So it's all good.
I'd love to be there with you.
The guy from Lost loved the show about people stranded on an island.
I think that's hilarious.
Part of the pitch of Lost was Survivor meets, I forget what was the other hybrid, but it was there was an element of Survivor in the pitch.
Wow.
Sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. That's just fantastic. Absolutely. Well, that's all I got, except for is there any, because you've dealt with all these crazy fans, these crazy Comic Cons.
Fans.
I'm one of them.
Is there any cosplay for Romero out there?
Any costume play? Is what he wants to know. Anybody dressed up as Romero at Comic Cons?
You know, not yet. I'm hoping in the next one, maybe
I'm not going to try and say that I have your outfit, but
anything that gets him closer to Vera Farmiga.
Oh, man.
What is Vera Farmiga picture? The Sheriff Romero.
The judge was very clear that it's illegal to wear a sheriff's outfit, and it's doubly illegal to camp outside Vera's house. So,
Well, let's get we're almost out of time here. Let's get to some news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV news.
You didn't know about the drop, did you?
Right, do I need all your news? Go.
I'll be really quick because we're so over. But it's season three. That was the big thing. It's been you guys have been signed on season three. It's going to be 10 episodes, and it airs in 2015. When do you guys start shooting? Do you have a schedule yet?
Excuse me, we don't know yet, but I think because they like the look of the original first season, the sort of the darker skies, we're probably going to push later on, probably more September, October.
Mm. Okay, excellent. And then Lounge, just a few shout-outs. I was reading a whole bunch of the notes, and Lounge Blogger actually mentioned something that we didn't mention. When Norman turns into Norma in the hotel room and confronts the brother, he's actually rubbing his leg. Where Norma has the scar.
The scar.
And that was a really astute observation, and I can't believe we missed that.
Yes, deep.
Thank you, Lounge Blogger.
And then Robert Lux, he demanded a shout out, which we will shout out because apparently my death count is wrong, and I forgot to mention Ethan. Yes.
I know. I knew your death count was wrong.
Running death count.
Okay.
Shout out to Robert Lux. Yeah.
And then I just want to say that last week my prediction about Norman killing Cody's dad was.
Well, congratulations.
We don't know that he's.
That's not news. Never mind. That's just you patting yourself on the back.
And that's a preview. That's in the previews. You can't say that you saw that you know that something.
I predicted it and it came true.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
Careful. Careful, she can predict stuff and it comes true. Careful.
Yeah. Oh, I also wanted to say I was nervous about having you on the show because we had B on the show, the teacher.
Miss Watson?
Yes.
Miss Watson.
Yeah,
and she died shortly after. So
that's
I was like,
not good.
Don't tell him that.
It's fine.
Don't tell him that.
I think, considering that it's been renewed for season three and season two's in the can, it's probably safe.
You never know.
You never know.
And is it safe to say at this point you're going to Comic-Con again?
We will be there.
All right, happy to be there.
I think it's July 26th we'll be there. So we're really looking forward to that. I think we might even be on the floor, which would be cool.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Great.
We'll see you there for sure.
I don't know yet. You know that. I just promise something.
Okay.
It's safe to assume.
I'll be on the floor.
It's safe to assume, but we're not confirming.
Let's say Bates Motel will have a presence. I predict Bates Motel will have a presence in Comic Con.
You got my address for the party. I want to go back to it.
No, you're getting to the party already.
Okay,
relax.
It was fun.
It's fine.
It was good.
You'll get to the party.
They closed down the place. It was awesome.
That was a normal moment there. Hey, we're going to do the thing. And then the adult goes, slow down.
It's going to happen. Don't worry. I'm going to make it.
The party, not so much.
Am I banned already? That was good.
Let's go to predictions.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
And now, you're AfterBuzz TV.
All right. Nestor, what do you predict for next week? What are your predictions?
What do you predict for season three? While you're at it.
Give me something.
Do I have to go first? All right.
Yes.
Okay, so...
you're so hot. You're so, like, patting yourself on the back about your predictions.
I know, but now I'm on the... So, I predict... I mean, this episode, next episode, we're going to have to find a way to hide a body, mm-hmm. I think. And I think that Norman is going to know for the first time that he has killed somebody. Him and Emma are going to, you know, go on a caper together and try and, like, or him and Cody, rather. Me and these names, I can't get it. So that, I mean, that's my only prediction I don't have. You know, I can't.
So wait, just to be clear, you're saying that, A, the dad is dead.
I think the dad is dead.
Which is not confirmed, that we know.
I think the dad
is
dead.
So you think the dad's dead, mm-hmm. and you're also saying, yeah. and by the way, if the dad's not dead, you got to recant all your prediction back-slapping you did to yourself.
Hey.
But anyway, the dad's dead, and then you think that Norma and Cody will be going off trying to deal with this in a secret way.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to, I think that this will be the first time that Norman knows, like, what he does.
Right, when he blacks out.
Okay. And so, I just think that they're going to have to, you know.
I'll take a piece of that. Flippo?
I think that Norma's not going to get a council seat because of this little wackadoo business that's going on here, throwing dudes down the stairs. I don't think that's going to fly. So I think that might be yanked back.
Yeah.
Like, congratulations, everything was great that day. No, it wasn't. So I think that's in the offing. That's my opinion.
Okay.
That's all I got.
I agree that this is definitely going to put a crink in Norma's plans to get that council seat. I also feel, I don't know if we talked about it before I got here, but I just felt really sorry for Cody this episode. It seemed like everything was Cody's fault.
Yeah.
And if her dad is dead, I just don't see much longer for Cody. I love the character, but I don't see her the show much longer.
Yeah.
I really am worried that Norman might have one of his episodes and kill her. Blame her on something and have one of those episodes.
That was my prediction from a couple of weeks ago. I predicted that a long time ago. I think that Christine will be revealed as a pawn of Nick's.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I think that Norma will keep her seat, but I think that Michael Bartan's character, George?
George.
I think George will is not in on it, but I think George is really genuinely interested in Norma, and I think there will be some sort of love triangle with George and my friend Alex Romero.
I think you're all 100% right and 100%
wrong. 100% right and 100% wrong. I'll take it. Well, thank you very, very, very much for coming on the show, Nestor Carbonell.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Listening, and we'll all continue to watch. And is there any way, are you on the Twitters or the
I'm still a dinosaur, but I am now making it my mission to get on Twitter for sure and see if anyone is interested.
People will be interested.
I think you'll get a couple followers.
You'll get a couple.
One or two. One or two. Dua, where can we find you?
Dua Casey on the Twitter, DuaKaissi.
Joe Flippo?
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo. My website is josephsanflippo.com.
Nando.
You can find me July 26th at the Bates Motel after party. No. You can find me on Twitter.
On the floor.
You can find me on Twitter at Nando Bell, NandoVel, and also on AfterBuzz with a bunch of shows with these fine fellows.
Yes, and you can find me at Twitter on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you very much for joining us for this very special episode of the Bates Motel AfterBuzz After show. Mouthful.
Easier for you to say.
Jeez. We will see you next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Joe.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.